Thank you. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Billy, for inviting me down. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure and honor to be asked to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor to be asked to get up and talk. Nobody much wanted to hear what I had to say when I got here a little while ago, and it's a pleasure to do it with good friends. Had a good drive down with Rich and George. Good friends came up with me, and it's great to see Billy again after it's actually been a few years since we've seen each other. And see Randy sitting over here, good surprise. Randy, I got sober in Charlottesville, Virginia, just right down the road, and Randy was in there in Charlottesville, Virginia when I got sober. So it's good. You always like to stick with people who saw you at your best. So you can't keep me honest, but you can keep me consistent. I got to tell the same lies again. I have a home group. My home group is the Hope Is Here group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Old Town Alexandria. It is every Tuesday night at 8:30 standard drunk time. It's a closed meeting. If you're an alcoholic or you got a problem with booze, please come by and visit us if you're ever in the area. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I have a sobriety date. It's January 24th, 1989. For that, I am truly grateful. I can't take any credit for it whatsoever because it wasn't my plan. I've officially now been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous about 16 and a half years longer than I intended to be. Therefore, I can't take credit for being here today. You know, I was going to do 6 months and out. You know, I hear a lot of people tell their stories and they say, you know, when I got to AA, I felt like I was home. I felt like I had arrived where I belonged. And God bless you if that's your story, but I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and I went, oh, God, not this. Not this. Please. I mean, I want to belong to something. I want to have a connection with somebody, but not this. Not AA. I was 20 years old. The only thing more uncool than being a member of AA when you're 20 is being a sober member of AA. So if you're new here tonight, today, this afternoon, whatever it is, if you're new here and you're not absolutely overjoyed to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. We're glad that you're here. I was not exactly overjoyed to wind up here when I got here. I am truly, truly grateful and glad that I am here today and feel very fortunate that I am here today, 17 years later. My life has become something that I want to live today. Not only is it worth living, it's become something that I want to live. It's become something that I wouldn't trade with anybody for all the tea in China, you know. And I wasn't looking for that when I got here. As a matter of fact, I wasn't an alcoholic when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Apparently, you become an alcoholic by going to too many meetings of AA. Because today, 17 years later, I have an extreme case of alcoholism. I mean, a serious bad case of alcoholism. But I didn't have it when I got here. I was concerned about a lot of things when I got to AA. I had a lot of problems when I got to AA. I was concerned about a lot of things. I was concerned about getting the girlfriend back, getting family to talk to me again, getting some money. I was concerned about the little folder in Johnny Law's desk drawer that had my name on the tab. I was concerned about a lot of things, but drinking, quite honestly, was not one of them because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. Now, it's just I'm not saying this is the way it is, but it's just my observation that everybody that comes into Alcoholics Anonymous either says one or two things. They either say, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I've known I'm an alcoholic for years. Or they say, oh, no, not me. I got some problems, but I am not an alcoholic, and that was me. Everybody who says they are or they aren't is basing their opinion on something, on what an alcoholic is. I can tell you when I said I'm not an alcoholic, I can tell you what I was basing that on. I was basing that on the fact that I never drank out of a brown paper bag or slept in a box. Therefore, I am not an alcoholic. I am many things, but not an alcoholic. I've come to find out since then that for some alcoholics it is that way and for others it's not. That's not what makes an alcoholic. But the day that I came to AA, January 24th, 1989, that particular day, I kind of came to AA by mistake. So not a whole lot of us get here on purpose, like we weren't really planning to get here. But that particular day, I came home. And I popped open a beer, and I downed half a Coors in pretty much one gulp. And the only way I can describe it is I lost hope. I lost hope that day. Because the only hope that a drinking drunk like me has is it's going to be different this time. It's going to be different this winter. It's going to be different this summer. It's going to be different when I get a job. It's going to be different when I get a different job. It's going to be different when I get her. It's going to be different when I get rid of her. It's always somehow, some way, it's going to be different this time because I was a periodic. Stopping was not my problem. I stopped hundreds of times. Staying stopped presented something of a problem for me because I always started again. And I was starting again, and my drinking was picking up. And for some reason, that day I turned up that beer, and it occurred to me there's nothing different. It just occurred to me that I was headed straight back down the road that I just came from, and for once in my life, I didn't want to take the trip. I didn't want to go because it wasn't fun. Not in the end. And I got a little bit scared. That was about 12:30 in the afternoon. About an hour later, I was walking down the street, and I ran into a guy that I used to drink and party with the year before. And the year before, this guy just, like, disappeared off the map. He just disappeared completely. If you were running with the crowd that I was running with and you disappeared, it only meant one of three things. Either you went to jail, you were dead, or you got sober. Went to treatment. And if he'd have gone to jail or he was dead, I would have known about it. And this guy didn't, there was no word on where this guy was. So I figured he went to treatment and got sober. Well, here he comes walking down the street an hour later. And I grabbed him by the arm and I said, Philip, will you take me to an AA meeting? Now, I had been to a few AA meetings. I had been 12-step by a member of AA 6 months prior. And I'd been to a few AA meetings. A few, because if you're not an alcoholic, you don't really need to go to AA meetings, do you? So I was doing what in my area we affectionately call auditing the course, which means I was going to get people off my back. That's what it means. So I asked Philip to take me to an AA meeting. First time I ever asked someone to take me to an AA meeting, that was about 1:30 in the afternoon. And he said, sure, Dave. He said, you know, yeah, I'll you know, tell me where to come and get you. I'll come and get you at 7:30. And we'll go to a meeting. And I told him where it was and everything. And it's amazing what the alcoholic mind can do with 6 hours. Because at 1:30 in the afternoon, I was just scared enough to ask someone to take me to an AA meeting. By 7:30 that night, I had figured out that I had grossly overreacted to the situation. I mean, this is, whoa, it's not that bad. What are you doing, man? AA? That's way too much. We don't want that much help. And I swear to God, to this day, I swear, he never gave me his phone number that day. I swear, if I had had his phone number, I would have called him and made an excuse. You know, I got to walk the dog, I got to wash my hair, I got to, you know, do anything. I got to shampoo the carpet. I would have said something. I would have said anything to get out of going to that AA meeting. But I did not have his phone number, and he was coming, so he came and got me. And took me to a meeting, and it turned out, I believe it was Monday night JPA. And I don't know, Randy might have been there at that meeting. I don't remember. But she'll know in a minute. My first AA meeting, three things happened at my first AA meeting. First one was, and by the way, y'all were talking like a foreign language to me. I mean, you were talking about conscious contact and higher power and serenity and spirituality and all this stuff. I didn't know anything about that stuff. I grew up going to the Southern Baptist Church, you know, Sunday morning and Royal Ambassadors and sword drills and all that. So I was a little bit relieved to see God up on the wall because I could talk about that. I could tell you some things about God. But as for all this other stuff you were talking about, I didn't know anything about that. The first thing that happened was they called for white chips. And I got a white chip that night because when they called for white chips, Philip gave me a poke in the ribs like this, like that's your cue. So I got up and got a white chip. Now, if you've ever picked up a white chip in Alcoholics Anonymous and they didn't ask you to get up and say anything, I'm going to tell you why they don't ask you to get up and say anything. I don't know if they were just feeling particularly generous that night or the meeting wasn't exciting enough or something, but they asked me when I picked up my white chip if I wanted to say anything. And I don't know much. I know much less today than I did when I got here, but there has never in my life been a time that I didn't have something to say. So I got up, and when I picked up a white chip in AA, I said, I am not an alcoholic. This is purely a precautionary measure, just in case. And they said something smarmy, like, keep coming back or something like that, you know. And then the second thing that happened was after the meeting, Philip said, you see that guy over there? I said, yeah. He said, ask him to be your sponsor. So I went up to him and said, will you be my sponsor? And he said, okay. He said, do you have a big book? The third thing that happened, I got a big book. He said, do you have a big book? I said, no. He said, do you have $5? I said, no. I lied. I didn't want to invest anything in this. I didn't know. I wasn't even staying that long. I didn't put $5 in it. My God, I think if World Services got $5 for everybody's first big book that they got, you know, we'd have, like, we wouldn't know what to do with that much money. So he bought me my first big book, and he gave me a ride home. He dropped me off. He said, I'll pick you up at 7:30 tomorrow night. I said, okay. So he picked me up the next night, took me to a meeting. Took me home after the meeting, dropped me off, said, I'll pick you up tomorrow night. Okay, picked me up the next night, took me to a meeting, dropped me off, said, I'll pick you up tomorrow night. Now I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. I said, you're going to do this, like, every night, aren't you? And he said, yeah, if you're new, it's suggested that you go to a meeting every night. And I said, don't you think that's a little extreme? Like, maybe if you're really alcoholic, like you, you know? He didn't think it was extreme. I didn't, my first 30 days, I didn't go to a meeting every day. I don't know how many meetings I went to. I went to meetings 2 a week, 3 a week. I don't know what it was because I wasn't paying attention anyway. I was just buying my time, and Alcoholics Anonymous was all I was doing. See, I had a lot of extracurricular activities that went along with my drinking. Extracurricular meaning illegal activities that I was involved in while I was drinking. And I quit all that stuff 6 months before, and I thought, look at everything else I've quit. Booze, no problem. Booze, I'm not an alcoholic. Booze is going to be easy, right? So in those first 30 days, I did everything except listen to what was going on. I counted the holes in the ceilings. I took 5 trips to the coffee pot, 3 cigarette breaks, figured out what girl I wanted to talk to after the meeting. You know, did anything except what pay attention to what was going on, because you're not really an alcoholic. You don't really need to pay attention to what's going on. So 30 days go by, and I went and I picked up my 30-day chip. It was a little blue poker chip. And I'll never forget Big Tom H., comes up and gives me, you remember Tom? Comes up and gives me a hug and says, congratulations on your 30 days. And I looked at him straight in the eye and I said, I'm going to drink. Which was news to me because I didn't even know that. And if I had known that, I certainly wouldn't have told him. But that's what came out of my mouth. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I thought, oh my God, here we go. I'm going to have to go through the whole thing. You got to be strong. You got to hang in there. You got so much to live for. Wait, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. All this stuff. He didn't say none of that. He looked me straight back in the eye and he said, no, you're not. You're coming with us. Now, I'm not exactly sure which step this is, but that's what he said. And since he was this much taller and this much wider than me, I found my first higher power. And I said, the most smartest thing that I've ever said, up to and including tonight, that I've ever said in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, okay. Okay. And a bunch of us went and rented some movies, went back and watched movies, went and got some pizza, and one of them gave me a ride home, and I went to bed, and when I woke up the next morning, I was still sober. When I knew that I was going to drink the day before. That pretty much sums up my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. It didn't occur to me until a long time later that was the first time in a long, long time that I took direction from another member of Alcoholics Anonymous over top of my own plan, because, oh, I had a plan. The plan was to pick up the 30-day chip and meet the blonde at the keg party afterwards. That's Dave's plan. And I took his direction over top of my plan. I stayed sober when I knew I was going to get drunk. So my sponsor has told me the magic word, the word that is the key to staying in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's okay. See? He's told me the deadliest words in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, but. There's two more deadly ones for me, and that's I know, I know, I know. By the way, I warn you, sponsors speak drunk. They know when you say I know, it means you're right, but I'm not going to do anything about it. Now, I told you, I got a sponsor when I picked up my white chip in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd love to be one of those guys that gets up and says, you know, I got a sponsor the day I walked in AA, and he's been my sponsor for the past 73 years or something, you know. But no, I've had a lot of sponsors. I've never counted them, 6, 7, 8 different sponsors. All of them have given, I've been grateful to every single one of them. All of them has given me something special. The sponsor that I have today, I've had for 7 years. But there's something very similar about every sponsor that I've ever had. And that is, every time my sponsor gives me a direction, I call him, my sponsor today, Tom, I know when I call him with something, I get like 3 minutes. Okay? If I can't spit it out in 3 minutes, it's not going to get out. Okay, we're not on the phone for like hours at a time. So I'm ready when I call him, and I call him, and okay, here's the situation, and here's the, you know, here's the player, and this is what's going on. And then he says, well, this is what I would do, Dave, or here's the spiritual principle that we work with on that. And as soon as he gives me a direction, every sponsor, no matter which one it's been, even to today, I have an immediate thought. Something immediately happens in my mind when a sponsor gives me a direction. And that is, my mind says, oh, that won't work. That won't work. As a matter of fact, that has nothing to do with what I just said. I think he's losing his hearing, you know. But I've learned the magic word. Okay, Tom. I just say okay, and I go and do it anyway. For no other reason, because I can't actually prove him wrong if I don't do what it is that he suggested doing. So for the past 7 years, I've been trying to prove my sponsor wrong, and my life has gotten so much better in the process. So I'm going to keep trying to prove him wrong. I'll give you an example of that. Before Tom, I had a sponsor named Mike. Great guy, still a good friend of mine. I had 25 years of sobriety at the time, and the wife and I were going through a little trouble, a hard time. I got married in sobriety, and things were not good, and I was suffering, and so I wrote some inventory, which really, in retrospect, was her inventory and not mine, but at the time, I thought it was mine. And I called up Mike, and I said, Mike, I got some inventory. I got to read to you. He said, okay, come on over, you know, so I went over to his house, you know, and I'm reading this thing, and I'm spilling my guts, you know, and I'm just convinced. I mean, the wife and I, we've just got irreconcilable differences, you know. My marriage is basically ending before my eyes, you know, and I'm reading all this stuff. And about 10 minutes into it, Mike goes, stop. I said, what? He said, do you have 20 bucks? I said, yeah. I'm thinking this is like the sponsorship fee they didn't tell me about finally or something, you know. He says, on your way home, buy your wife some flowers. And I thought, you idiot. 25 years of sobriety and that's the best you've got? Buy her flowers? My marriage is ending. We're not even speaking to each other. We're not even sleeping in the same bed. Buy her flowers? And I said, okay, Mike. And I got in my car and I'm driving home, and I swear the whole way I drive to Giant or Safeway or something and get half a dozen red roses, and the entire time I'm thinking this is the dumbest thing that I have ever done in my entire life. And I get half a dozen red roses, and I go home, and I come in, and she's on the floor playing with the kids, and I walk up to her, and I don't know where I got these words, but what I said was, here, honey, I bought these for you because I love you just the way you are. And I swear to God, she went just like this. She went, a breakdown, and we talked for about 2 hours and talked out some misunderstandings and stuff, and stuff was good for like 3 weeks after that. I mean, 3 weeks I'm walking around going, oh my God, I can't believe it worked. So I say okay now. We're still married, by the way. I need to talk a little bit about drinking, because this is an AA meeting, and I always feel like drinking at least deserves an honorable mention in a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, since it's part of why we're here. I did like to drink a lot. my family, I come from a normal family. I come from a Leave It to Beaver, normal, two loving parents, wonderful family life. I'm really the only drunk in my family. If there was anything dysfunctional about my family, it was me. And if I get a look back in my history and my past, nothing traumatic, nothing terrible happened in my past. You know, I look back at my past, and the only reason I can figure out why I'm an alcoholic is I love booze. I love booze. I can't point to anything. It's nothing my parents did. It's nothing anybody did to me. I just love booze. I just remember feeling a few things from the very start. Guilt, shame, fear. I don't know whether I had more than other people. I just know I had it. I just know it was there. Feeling like, to me, it was like everybody else had some piece of information or some key or something that enabled them to know what to do and where to go and how to live life, and I didn't have it because I was always guessing and trying to figure out what I was supposed to be doing, where I was supposed to be going, how I fit in, and what was supposed to be going on. And I had had sips off of my brother's beer, or, you know, a sip off of Scotch before it burned, tasted nasty, didn't want any more of it. But when I was about 15 or 16, 16 years old, I went over to my friend Mike DeWop's house, and Mike mixed up Bacardi 151 and Country Time lemonade mix in a Tupperware bowl. And we started passing that thing around, and I started drinking that, and that's when it happened. That's when the magic happened. That's when I got that warm, fuzzy feeling all the way from the tips of my toes to the top of my head. And I knew release from care, boredom, and worry like I had not known it before. For once in my life, I felt comfortable. I felt okay. Fridge over here, I like his description of it. He says, when I drank, it felt like it stopped the clock, you know, like I was racing some clock somewhere all the time. And when I drank, it just stopped the clock. Now, I told you, I was a periodic, you know. I would get sober for a while, you know, a day, a week, a month. I think there was a month in there somewhere. I can't prove it, but, I'm pretty sure there was a month in there somewhere. And then I would always drink again, you know. And my mother, God bless her, I've seen her have, like, 3 glasses of champagne in her entire life. She's not even close to an alcoholic. And she's asking me, you know, what is it with drinking, you know, what is it, you know? And I say, you know how I would quit for a while and then I would start up again? And she would say, yeah. And I said, you know, I quit for like 2 weeks. And she'd say, yeah. I'd say, it's not really what the drinking was like. It's what those 2 weeks were like. She said, what were they like? I said, hold your breath for 2 weeks. Hold your breath for 2 weeks. And then I'd take a drink and it's literally like breaking the surface, man. Like, oh my God. Could breathe again, like you feel everything go out, you know. That's the way I remember my first drunk. That's the way I remember alcohol. I can't go back and feel it again, but that's the way I remember it. It felt good. I know whatever happened that night, I was willing to pay the price to get it again. You know, I never lost anything to booze. I traded it all in. I gave it up willingly just to get that sense of ease and comfort one more time. Now, we were reading a big book on the way down, you know, and the doctor's opinion is talking about, no wonder I always felt different. I am different than the non-alcoholic. I found that out, that what happens to them is not what happens to me. Since I've gotten sober, I've had several jobs of my own choosing, you know, without, you know, like having to leave before they caught me or, you know, get fired or anything like that, you know, just like get a job, get a better job. And the job I had before this one, my manager and I became good friends. And his name is Bob, and Bob's not an alcoholic. And I came to Bob one time, said, can I leave a little bit early? I've been asked to do a commitment in AA, and I got to leave a little bit early. And he said, okay. And it's funny how when you tell a non-alcoholic that you're a member of AA, the discussion always comes back to drinking. And so he says, oh, I'm not an alcoholic. I said, no, you're not an alcoholic, Bob. He said, well, I might have a couple of beers a year. He said, I might go to a party and have a beer, and it might be 6 months go by before I go to another party and have a beer. And I've always been curious guy. I've always been curious why it is that people who can drink safely don't. You know? I don't know if it makes me sicker than other people, but if I could drink safely, my God, why would you stop to take a breath, you know? I'd be going right now. So I said, well, Bob, how is it you come about this philosophy? And he said, well, one time a friend and I drank a gallon of tequila. And I said, oh, yeah, a friend and I drank a gallon of vodka in about 2 hours one time, found out what it was like to be blind drunk and have my first out-of-body experience. But I said, yeah, we drank a gallon of vodka one time. I said, what happened? He said, well, I got really sick. I got sick, too. I was, you know, you people who drank, three fists every day and never got hangovers or never got sick, I hate you. I was a puker. I got sick every time. And that time I drank that vodka, I timed it. Next day, every hour on the hour, over the trash can, bile, dry heaves, and everything for 7 hours. I went drinking that night, by the way. But I said, yeah, I got sick too. I said, and then what happened? He said, well, I got so sick, I never wanted to do that again. And I thought, and? I mean, to me, that was just part of the deal. I mean, that's just part of the deal. That's just part of the price you pay. And I was more than happy to pay the price. And I can guarantee you, when I was leaning over that trash can, a lot of things went through my mind. You know? Here you go. I'll pace myself next time. Right. I'll use chasers. You know? I'll stick to beer. You know? A lot of things went through my mind. I can guarantee you one thing that never went through my mind was I'll never drink that much again. As a matter of fact, I look forward to drinking that much again. Now, it's obvious to me that if what happened to me happened to Bob when he drank that half gallon of tequila, he would have jumped at the next opportunity to drink it too. But he didn't want it. What happened to him ain't what happened to me. Because I was definitely willing to do that again. But I drank as much and I drank as long as I could. I was always, it befuddled me why once I stopped drinking, I couldn't stay stopped, you know? I really didn't, you know, you talk about the allergy, the phenomenon of craving that we have, which my sponsor described exactly like this. He said, Dave, once you start drinking, do you know when you're going to stop? No, Tom. That's powerlessness over alcohol. Okay. Then he asked me a second question. He says, Dave, when you stop drinking, do you know when you're going to start again? No, Tom. Sounds to me like it doesn't matter whether you're stopping or you're starting. You're powerless over alcohol either way. Whoa. How do you do that? I don't know, but I think, and I didn't make any of this stuff up. This is the stuff that has been given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous that I identify with. I think I know why I couldn't stay stopped. Okay? Because I would stop. You'll find something out, too. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you come to meetings, you don't drink, and you just keep your nose clean and kind of follow the rules, things on the outside will get better. People start to talk to you again. People, you know, boss will like you again, showing up for work, got a little money in your pocket. A woman will like you again because you're there. You're not drunk. You're not making a mess. But, you know, I might even get some pats on the back. Attaboy, Dave. You're doing great. You're doing fantastic. And then, you know what I do then? I drink. You know what happens when I drink? I get drunk. I screw it all up again. See? And it drives non-alcoholics crazy. It absolutely drives me crazy when you do that. I think I know today, or at least this is the best description I've heard of why I couldn't stay stopped. I heard this doctor talking about alcoholism. He said there's background noise in everybody's head. He said the background noise in a normal person's head is like this. The background noise in an alcoholic's head is like this. Ah! 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, this thing is going on. It's going, God, what an idea. I should have done that. Next time I'm going to say this, I'm going to tell them that next time. What are we going to do about this? What are we going to do about that? What if they come for this? What are we going to do about this thing? Oh, my God. And so I would literally stay sober as long as I could stand it. I would stay sober as long as I could stand it. Because you know what booze would do? Booze, turn down the volume. It shut my head off and turned off all them voices going nonstop chattering so I could know a little bit of peace for a little bit of time. And you know what? That was worth it. It was worth it, man. Even if it was just 10 seconds, just right before I went over the edge into oblivion, it was worth it. Because otherwise, I had no peace. I had no peace. I was sober, and I went to bed. I'd lay my head down on the pillow. You know what would happen? As soon as I laid my head down on the pillow and closed my eyes. Hey, is your brain talking? You can't go to sleep right now. We've got to figure this thing out. What are we going to do about this? What are we going to do about that? What are we going to do? Oh, my God. I was a guy running around the dorm trying to bum a six-pack off somebody so I could get to sleep. That was me. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous with open-mindedness, willingness, and honesty. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with Eric, and Randy can attest to this. I came with arrogance, intellectual and spiritual arrogance. That's the best way to put it. Know-it-all-ism. Belligerence was a premium quality of mine. I had all these things. If you haven't figured this out yet, not everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is getting well. I can say that because I was one of them. I was one of them. It's the old adage, what happens if you sober up a drunken horse thief? You got a sober horse thief. Yeah, exactly. And I was not drinking, but I brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. With all my grand plans and designs and all my ideas and all my cutting and scheming, I'm not saying I was, you know, Jesse James, anybody wonderful, but I was I was petty, mostly. But, you know, I brought me, you know, and dating her and her and her and all this kind of stuff going on and doing a lot of fellowship. I basically just brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous, the mess that was me, and found people who were like me, who I could relate to, you know. And we did what we did. I was a member of the parking lot crew. I don't know if anybody's been a member of the parking lot crew, but, you know, we were the ones that would stay for the first half of the meeting, and the second half of the meeting we'd be in the parking lot smoking cigarettes and talking about what everybody said and who's doing who and who's doing what and how they're big hypocrites and where are we going after the meeting. That was me. I was a member of the parking lot crew. To speed things up a little bit, I was 3 years sober, and I don't have a watch up here, Billy, so I thought there might be a clock back there, but... Oh, there you go. Let me do that so I make sure, because I'll just keep talking. Well, I need to make sure I know where it is. I was 3 years sober, and I was living in Richmond, Virginia, and I was enjoying the gifts of Step None. If you're not familiar with the gift of Step None, it's nothing. That's exactly what it is. And I was living in Richmond, had actually graduated school, which was a miracle in itself, and... working down there, and a lot of things happened around that time. One was, you know what happened? After 3 years, and I can't say, I cannot stand up here and say that in 3 years, nobody ever said the solution to your problem, which is alcoholism, because I eventually became resigned to that, is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's contained in the 12 steps. If you just practice the spiritual way of life, things might get better. Because I remember when I was 2 years sober, going to my sponsor, Chris L., going, why isn't it working? I'm not drinking, and I'm trying real hard, and it's not getting better. You know, I remember sitting out on his back porch, asking why things aren't working, and Chris saying, well, how about that third step? And me literally going, nah, that's not it. That can't be it. And going on about my miracle. I wasn't ready to give up my plans yet. I wasn't ready to give up my ideas. After 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, pretty much what I'd figured out through my brilliance that AA was we all escape the alcohol monster here together, and we have a lot of fun while we're here, and we fellowship, and we one day at a time together, and do a lot of pool parties and stuff like that. And there's nothing wrong with that stuff. That's all I was doing, though. And, you know, we have a lot of fun, and we kind of set up around the AA campfire and roast marshmallows, you know, and enjoy our time here. And we got the old AA fence, you know, in between us and alcohol. And the only problem was every once in a while the alcohol monster would reach over the fence and hit somebody. So I figured you come here, you do it one day at a time, you have fun, you stay as long as you can, and when your number comes up, you go out. And I wait for my number to come up. And hopefully you make it back if your number comes up. That's what it seemed like to me. Okay? I told you I was brilliant. And that's exactly what was happening to the people that I was running with, too. They were going back out and going and doing things. So I was waiting for my number to come up. And one of the girls that I was hanging out with drank and tried to commit suicide and called me, and I found her at 7-Eleven. I spoke at a meeting in Richmond Monday night, and I was following Sammy to get over to that meeting, and I passed that 7-Eleven. I recognized it as soon as we passed it, the 7-Eleven, and I found her out and got to hold her wrist closed and all that stuff. And about that time, within a week after that, I went regularly to this 5:30 meeting, commuters meeting over in Richmond. A guy showed up at that meeting. He'd never been to that meeting before. To the best of my knowledge, he's never been back to that meeting since, but he was there that day, and he talked like nobody I'd ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous before. He talked about a solution to his alcoholism. He's arrogant, too. He called himself a recovered alcoholic. Ooh. What I mistook for self-confidence, I found out later, was God-confidence. But he knew a lot about the big book and the steps, too. He talked a lot about it, at least. He wouldn't shut up about it. And the biggest thing was there was something in his eyes. There was a sparkle in his eyes. There was life there. There was lightness. He was carrying a message of depth and weight, but there was lightness, and there was joy in his eyes. And I was attracted to it. So I sidled up to him after the meeting. And I realized I was going to have to do something if I was going to stay here. But I'm a just enough kind of alcoholic, you know. I want to do just enough to get what's coming to me, and then the rest is negotiable after that, right? So I sidled up to Al and I said, you know, sounds like you know a lot about the steps. I was thinking about brushing up on the steps a little bit, you know. He said, oh, you want to do the steps? I said, I guess you could say that, you know. Now I warn you, these bleeding blue sponsors that you get in AA, if you tell them you want to do the steps, they think you really mean it. They really take you seriously. So he said, meet me at this treatment center meeting over here on Saturday afternoon. And I went over there and I met him and we sat down at a picnic table outside and opened the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he started showing me things in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which incidentally I had read 3 times prior to this, and I'd never seen a word that he showed to me that day. And 3 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally did the first step. I finally conceded to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, that book was a true an accurate description of me. And I found out why I was an alcoholic. And he showed me that through that book. And then we came to the chapter We Agnostics, and I said, we don't need to read this. I believe in God, you know, old, you know, Sunday school, Southern Baptist thing. Well, he said, it doesn't say for those who think they're agnostics, it says we agnostics. Okay. Read the chapter. I found out later on, someone gave me a different definition of an agnostic. They said an agnostic is someone who says they believe in God but acts as if they don't. And that was very accurate of me. I'd have sworn on a stack of Bibles all day long that I believed in God, but if you'd have watched my actions, you'd have seen a whole different story. Right? So anyway, we read how it works, and we get to the A, B's, and C's and how it works. At the top of the second page there's an A, a B, and a C. And he asked me 3 questions. He said, do you believe that you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety as described in this book? And I said, oh, yes, absolutely. I could admit to my innermost self. He said, do you believe there's any human power can relieve your alcoholism, since I have been trying to relieve my alcoholism? See, there's a difference. I thought I suffered from alcohol. Turns out alcohol is not my problem. Alcoholism is my problem. And that's a whole different ballgame. Turns out I had this problem, alcoholism, before. And what I used to treat it with was alcohol. And it worked pretty darn good for a while. I don't know about you, I had a lot of fun drinking at the beginning. It wasn't fun at the end, but I did have a lot of fun at the beginning. It worked pretty well for a while. But then the thing that was a solution to my problem became a problem. And that was my drinking, and I had to come here. But now the alcohol is gone. And lo and behold, hello, here it is. I got this problem called alcoholism. I've been trying to relieve it for 3 years. I came in here. I tried Dave's. Let me tell you Dave's program of action, okay? I tried the physical, all right? Get the body healthy, the mind will follow. I took up every sport known to man except high lie. I became an ace at racquetball. I practiced my tennis serve an hour a day. I played rugby. I ran 5 miles a day. Not all at once in one day, but I did all these things. Played rugby, real tough sport, right? Ran 5 miles a day, spent 3 hours in the gym. Obviously, I haven't done any of these things in a long time. But I did this at the beginning, you know, to get my body healthy. And I still couldn't look myself in the eye in the mirror. Oh, wait, it's a spiritual program. So I pulled out my Bible and I memorized some Bible verses. And I read big books like I Am Now by Martin Buber and Iron John, you know, and that's the wild man thing or whatever, you know. So I come to meetings and talk about God and talk about spirituality, and everybody goes, ooh. And then I'd get in my car and just die. Just die, because it still hurt. And boy, I could sound good, but it still hurts so bad inside. Damn. I didn't have no solution for this thing. So he said, I said, no, there's no human power to relieve my alcoholism. I've been trying. He said, do you believe that God can and will? And I told my sponsor my first lie. I told him yes. I told him yes because I've been here 3 years. I know you're supposed to say yes. But you know, all these years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't think I was an alcoholic, you know what I really believed when I walked in here? I really believed that if you took a knife and you started right here at my Adam's apple and cut me down to my belly button and opened me up, you'd find nothing but black, dead, dry rot inside. There was nothing good, nothing pure, nothing whole, nothing worth saving. left in there. And I wasn't 100% sure that God would take someone like that back. That's the way I looked at it, taking me back. I just wasn't sure. Oh yeah, I know He'd do it for you. He'd do it for you. He'd do it for you. You don't know me. You don't know where I've been. You don't know what I've done. And you don't know what goes on right up here. I ain't sure God wants something like that back. But He saved me with the next question, because He asked me, are you willing to follow through with the program of action as it's outlined in this book? And having absolutely no clue what I was in for, I said yes. And we started. And He sent me off to do my 4-step. Took me about 2 weeks. I got my 4-step done. My girlfriend made me do it. Girls can make me do things that I normally wouldn't do. I got it done, and I called Al, and we took an hour and a half ride in the car, probably out to Farmville, to that meeting. Me with the flashlight, you know, reading my... I don't know about you, but I had a polite sponsor. You know what a polite sponsor is? A polite sponsor is while you're riding along, and you're pouring your heart out to him, and you're telling him all the things that you swore you'd never tell anybody, and you take to your grave. When he yawns, he turns his head. Okay, and then what happened, you know? Turns out I wasn't quite as special as I thought I was. As my sponsor Tom today says, he said, Dave, whatever it is you did, is there a word in the dictionary for it? I said, yeah. He said, when somebody did it before you. You ain't original. But you know what happened as a result of that? I drove away from that fist up for the first time in 3 years feeling like a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Feeling like I belonged here. Feeling like, you know, up until then, this was your meetings. Your meetings, your coffee, your fellowship. I was just hanging out for the good time. For once in my life, I felt like a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was doing the things that sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous were doing. And it went on from there. It went on to the amends, and it went on to trying to work with other alcoholics, you know. And at some point, the amazing thing that happened was, at some point, sometime, I don't know when it was, during that process, I woke up one day and realized that I hadn't thought about drinking in a long time. Not only that, I hadn't thought about not drinking in a long time. If I wasn't thinking about drinking, I was thinking about not drinking. I hadn't even thought about it. It was gone. And I didn't even give anybody permission to take it. It just went. Just like that. What I found out was, when I practiced the solution to my problem, which is alcoholism, the solution given here, the problem goes away. It doesn't exist. You know, today, you know when the only time I think about drinking is? When I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and we talk about drinking. Luckily, I'm in a meeting when it happens. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. Now, through my experience, I have also found out that when I stop practicing the solution, the problem comes back. And, oh boy, does it come back. Big time. I got to... Shortly after that, I got to go to South America and work for a year and a half. That was a trip, because I signed up for this thing before I started this process with my sponsor of doing the steps. And it takes a while, you know, they send you papers, you send them back, they send you more papers, you send them back. And finally one day they called and said, your group's leaving from Miami on such and such date, be down there. And so this whole time, I'm into this 11 step, this conscious contact, right? So I'm praying, okay God, if you don't want me to do this, just let me know. Just tell me, okay? Told over like 6 or 8 months, you know. So I go down there, you know, until the day we're leaving for South America, you know, at 6 a.m. I'm down by the pool with my little 24 hours a day, you know, on my knees going, okay, God, if you don't want me to do this, now would be a really good time to let me know. Because we're getting on the plane in a couple of hours, you know. And the bush didn't light on fire, and the waters of the pool didn't part, so I got on the plane, you know, went down there and just had a fantastic time, had an awesome time. Lived 8,000 feet above sea level in between three volcanoes in a town of about 300 people, and not a one of them spoke English. I learned to speak pretty good Spanish, because if you want to eat, you're going to learn to speak Spanish, you know. and found an AA group in the next town over. And while I was there, my home group was Grupo Siempre Unidos de La Tacunga, Ecuador. And they do mean things to newcomers there, too, like make them read the preamble thing, you know, because they knew I couldn't pronounce Anonimidad, you know, so they'd laugh at me. But anyway, they were a group of like 8 people. We met 6 nights a week. I mean, after being there 2 weeks, I could have got up and told any of their stories. They could have got up and told my story, you know, but we stayed sober together, and we had a good time, and we did a little bit of 12-step work. As a matter of fact, the first night I was there, they do coffee after the meeting. That's like, you know, nobody drinks coffee until the meeting's over. Everybody gets a cup of coffee, you know, 10, 15 minutes. That's still that's what they do down there. So, you know, they get this, and of course, I'm the novelty. You know, I'm a gringo, and I'm new, and, you know, it's a little town and everything, so they want to know, you know, are the steps the same, are the traditions the same, you know, how are the meetings up there, what do you do? And after about 10 minutes of this, this 54-year-old man looks straight across at me and says, "Will you listen to my fifth step?" And I went, "You know, I don't speak very good Spanish." And he said, "I know." I got him now. I learned. I said, "Okay, we're going to do this thing. We're going to do it right. There's only one way I know how to sponsor people, and that's the way that I was sponsored." So I went and got a Spanish big book, you know, because if you're going to sponsor somebody, you got to know how to say all the big words, you know, like recovery and surrender, serenidad and recuperado and all that stuff, you know. So I got a Spanish big book, and I sat there literally with the English big book and the Spanish big book going like this, you know, until I knew it, you know, and I sponsored a couple of guys there, and they stayed. So here's where I got hooked. That was Lucho. And Lucho started doing it, man. Lucho did his 4-step and his 5th step and went and started doing 9-steps. And he was 3 years sober at the time, and he was just like any newcomer I've met in AA. I mean, he was just as serious as a stone. I mean, if he'd have laughed, it'd have cracked his face, you know. Because I was the same way when I got here, you know. I mean, you know, the happy-go-lucky, joyous people in AA, I hated them. I hated them when I got to AA because there was nothing funny about what was going on in my life when I got here. You know, no, laugh. Share my feelings with you. And, you know, he was just as serious as a heart attack, you know, and he started doing this process. And one day I was walking through the town. He was a taxi driver. And I was walking through the town, passing the taxi stand, caught up in my own mind about everything that's going on. Got to do this, got to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I just happened to look up and look over. And there was Lucho with his taxi buddy, and he had his head thrown back laughing with these guys. And it was right then. I got hooked on working with newcomers. I got hooked on sponsoring people. That gave me a feeling that, I'm going to tell you what, that was a better high than I got out of than anything I ever drank, smoked, or snorted. It's like, I don't get people sober. I don't keep people sober. God gets people sober. But man, when I help a newcomer, I get a seat on the 50-yard line to watch God happen to another one of his kids. And buddy, that is not to be missed. It is the best show on the face of the earth. And I got immediately hooked. I came back, I met a girl, Boy Meets Girl in AA, and we got married. And, you know, I thought when I got married, she was actually, when we started dating, I was 6 years sober and she was 6 months sober. And I know, you know, this whole thing about you're not supposed to date anybody with less than a year, you know. When the guys I sponsor, when they come to me and tell me they want to date a girl with less than a year, I tell them, okay. But the way this program works is if you want what I have, you do what I do. So you can date anybody with less than a year, but you have to marry her. They haven't taken me up on it yet. You know? So I figured this thing was getting serious. I kind of hooked her up with her sponsor, you know, so she could work the steps, kind of hedge my bets. And we got married and set out. We have 2 wonderful children. Will is 9 years old, born January 24th, 1997. Born on my anniversary, which is fantastic, you know. Because even in my house, on my anniversary, it ain't about me. We don't celebrate Dave's anniversary in my house. We celebrate Will's birthday. It ain't about me. It's the best anniversary present I've ever gotten. Our daughter is 7 years old, and she's got her daddy's genes. God help her. I keep telling my wife about my daughter. I said, we just have to find a way to channel her powers for good, and the world will be a better place. Otherwise, it's Who knows what's going to happen? God bless her. She's wonderful. She's a spitfire. She is so full of energy and ideas. Lord, help us all. I could sit here and tell you story after story about her. One day I was taking her to the veterinarian. We were going to get another cat. We had three cats, and it was sleeting outside. I got a four-wheel drive. I wasn't worried about it, but it was sleeting outside. She said, Daddy, she was 5 years old at the time. She said, Daddy, it's snowing outside. I said, no, not it's sleeting. She said, what's sleet? I said, it's not like snow, fluffy. It's like ice pellets. You hear it in the windshield. And she says, there's no such thing as sleet. You made that up. And I said, no, I swear. It's sleet hitting the window. She says, I know there's no such thing as sleet because I know everything. I said, honey, nobody knows everything. She said, okay, but I know more than you do. I just give you an idea. they're both doing great. You know, my wife and I thought, gosh, you know, I'm marrying this great girl in AA, and we've both been through the steps, and, you know, but I'll never have to explain to her why I have to do AA and why I have to sponsor people, you know, and we'll always have this understanding. Guess what? You know? We went through a very rocky period. I went through a period of a couple of years. My wife and I are running. We've been married, coming up on 10 years. We've been married 9 years. And our running joke is married 9 years, four of them good. And that's luckily at the latter four, not the first four, you know. And there was a period of about 2 years there where my marriage was dying a quiet death, you know. It wasn't one of those where nobody was throwing plates and screaming and storming out and saying, I want a divorce or anything like that. My marriage was just dying a quiet, slow, prolonged death. And it was killing me because I was running around doing all this stuff in AA. I was getting asked to speak places at conventions and stuff, and I was sponsoring people, and I was, you know, GSR to the district, and I was doing all this stuff in AA. And my home life was a wreck. I mean, and there was nothing that I could do about it. It was like watching a ship go down, and I was powerless to do anything about it. And it was killing me. And I realized that if I was going to stay sober, I was going to have to start doing something. And I mean, it drove me to my knees. And I prayed like I have never prayed before, you know. And you know what? I had to pray for a lot of things. But you know, I had to pray for the fear of getting divorced to be removed. I had to pray that I would not be afraid to get divorced. And I finally came to the place. Because in my mind, we cannot get divorced. I mean, it's just not an option. We cannot fail. And the harder I tried to make my marriage work, guess what? The worse it got. And when I came to the place where it was okay, didn't want to get divorced, but it was okay, whichever way it went, I knew it was going to be okay, then I didn't have to get divorced anymore. And you know, it's funny, my wife and I sit here now, and there's no one thing that we can point back and say, that was it, you know. That was the day, or that was the thing that happened. That was it. Things just started to change. Things just started to change. And my God, I've always loved my wife, but I really love her today. She is one of my best friends. I admire her. I respect her. She's awesome, you know, and my kids. My life hardly resembles what it was when I came in here. I've got a good job. I got a good home. I got a beautiful wife. I got two lovely kids. I got two cars, one of them a minivan, three cats, and yes, a white picket fence. I do. White picket fence. Two kids, boy and a girl, whole American dream thing, you know. Which is funny because one of the last things I ever wanted to wind up as was ordinary. I did not want to be ordinary, just plain ordinary. You know, I'm going to be special. I'm going to be something. And what I just described to you is about as ordinary as it gets. And I have never been happier in my entire life. What I found out was I thought I was too bad for God. I thought I was too bad for God. And what kids teach me a lot. Kids are very God-like in a lot of ways. They're very kid-like in a lot of ways, trust me. But they're very God-like in a lot of ways, too. You know? All I have to do is ask myself, is there anything that my kids, do my kids get under my skin sometimes and upset me? Yeah. They get under my skin and upset me sometimes. Do they make me sad sometimes? Sometimes they make me sad. All I got to do is ask myself, is there anything my kids could do to make me love them less? And the answer is no. There isn't a damn thing my kids could do to make me love them any less. And then all I got to do is ask myself, am I a better parent than God? Is it possible that my kids could not make me love them less? And that a loving, all-powerful God could love me? There's anything that I could do to make an all-loving, all-powerful God love me less? No. You know why my kids love me? My kids don't care that I get asked to speak in Madison, Virginia. My kids don't care how many people I sponsor. They don't care how many years I've been sober. They don't care what my home group is. They don't care how much money I make. They don't care what I do for a living. Do you know why my kids love me? Because I'm their dad. Period. Do you know why my God loves me? Because I'm his kid. Period. Bill Amup in New York, Pennsylvania has one of my favorite sayings. He said, God doesn't care whether I'm drunk or sober. God just cares. I realize now that God didn't love me one bit more the day after I walked in AA than he did the day before I walked into AA. He has always loved me that much. You know, that third step. When I was new, people would ask me, have you taken the third step? And I'd say, yeah. Now, what they meant when they said, have you taken the third step, was, have you said the prayer with your sponsor and proceeded on with the rest of the steps? What I meant when I said I've taken the third step is, I cut a deal with God. I'm a deal maker. And the deal was this. Okay, God, you take care of the charges and the tickets and the woman and all this, and you give me a nice life, and you know what? I'll be good. I won't drink. I made a mistake of kind of admitting this to Al one time. I said, yep, third step, doing the deal. He said, deal? I said, yeah, it's a deal, right? He said, tell me something. He said, a deal, Dave, a deal is kind of like a barter, kind of like, you know, you have something they need, they have something you need, you know, you exchange. I said, yeah, it's kind of like that. He said, tell me, Dave, what is it you have that God needs? Sponsors have a way of asking you questions that make you look bad no matter how you answer them. Okay? I didn't know, number one, that I could never hold up my end of that kind of deal. And number two, what am I trying to do? There's nothing. I don't need to earn God's love. I had it from day one. There's nothing to earn. There's nothing to win. There's nothing to lose. There's nothing to gain. I've had it since day one. I've always had it. So where does this AA thing come at? This AA thing comes in here. As long as I'm doing what you people have shown me in AA, number one, I don't have to take a drink. Because I know what not taking a drink is like. That's not good. And number two, the more I do AA, the better my life gets. The more I do AA, the better I feel. Right here, 2 inches behind my belly button. Not here where I show you how everything's so wonderful and I'm just loving sobriety. Talk about right here, 2 inches behind my belly button. When it's 2 o'clock in the morning and the lights are out and it ain't nobody but me and God, I feel okay right here, 2 inches behind my belly button. That's what I've got. God loves me whether I'm drunk or sober. But boy, I sure am enjoying being served. So I'm going to keep doing this AA thing. Thank you again, Bill, for asking me to speak.